sometimes you might have an opportunity to create music and pitch it, and that's great, but it's not going to get you closer to success. When you're starting out, you'll have somebody write one song to brief and they think that they're going to make $500,000 in a year.
Jessica Vaughn,
head of sync at Venice Music, president of Head Bitch Music.
Things that I see in a brief might be tempo. They might give some reference artists. There might be some keywords and some lyrical moments that they need. Maybe there's a budget and they're like, hey, we want something that will clear between 10 to 30K all in. Kind of my job to help the artist monetize their catalog in a way that feels authentic to them and gets them their paper.
Every artist dreams of getting their song synced into a movie, a video game, or an advert. But very few have a deep understanding of how the sync industry really works. Today I'm speaking to Jessica Vaughn, head of sync at Venice Music, and she's breaking down exactly the steps you need to know about responding to a brief, what to include in your pitch, and how to maximize your chance of success for getting your song placed and securing the bag. This is half art and half science, understanding the creative elements and how to stay authentically you, but also maintain the commercial elements and ticking off all the boxes in what they are looking for. You're going to want to take notes. I learned so much. I was asking from a genuine place of wanting to learn more. And so I hope this conversation serves you well with Jessica.
I'm so thankful you're here, Jessica. I have so many questions about the idea of sync that confuses a lot of entry-level artists. And they know they want their song in a video game. They want their song on Netflix. They want their song heard by thousands and millions of people. And they want to get paid for it as well. But not many people understand like really what sync is truly about is in fitting with the identity that the brand wants to have sonically for themselves. Can we start from the very top and just understand like how does Venice help artists get their music featured in sync, please?
We represent artists for sync, meaning we are a distribution company, so we primarily work with the sound recording. It's kind of my job to listen to the music, tag it with metadata, so corresponding metadata that maybe is genre related, maybe something specific about their song, maybe it's a love song, maybe it's I wish I had more money type of song, whatever it is, I tag it accordingly. And then my clients in all media, film, TV, gaming, advertising, etc., trailers, they usually come to me and they say, hey, I'm looking for something like this with that can fit within this budget. Maybe it's an easy clear, meaning there's not 20 different people and they have to reach out to you to clear the song. And then it's my job to look through our catalog and see if I have something that fits. And I submit that music and then I negotiate those terms. So there's a lot of different ways that can look, what that can look like. You know, sometimes you're following a brief. Maybe, you know, a client is telling you what they need. And other times you're sending the music directly to, you know, a showrunner, a music supervisor, or an ad agency and saying, hey, here are some of our new tracks. I really think this would work for X, Y, or Z. So it's all different ways. Sometimes the song is actually written into a script. So yeah, it's kind of my job to help the artist monetize their catalogs in a way that feels authentic to them and gets them their paper.
Let's actually dive straight in there, please. How does one price up a sync deal? Is it based on metrics like streaming volume? Is it based on artist followers? What are some of those conditions that go into pricing a song? Or is it just they have a budget on the client side and you're trying to maneuver and work into that?
You're going to get a different answer, everyone you ask about this. I come from the mindset, you know, I used to be like a full-time artist. And so I have a different perspective when it comes to negotiating the terms of a deal and what the budget looks like, because I've definitely had past publishers and labels price me out of opportunities I wanted to participate in. Metrics help, you know, if you're an artist that's moving pop culture, the likelihood that your music is going to cost more money. It's going to cost more money. If you're signed to a major label, they have just certain thresholds that they just won't go under. For an independent artist, you know, you kind of look at a few things. Is this song doing well across the board? Is it on radio? Is it doing well on DSPs? Do they have a lot of followers? You know, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get less money because you don't have a lot of followers. Maybe you have a lot of streams and like social media isn't your thing. So there's a lot of different things that go into it. Also, yeah, I mean, each show and each advertising spot might have a certain budget or a threshold where they're saying, I can only go up to this and I only really want to pay that if it's Beyonce. So you kind of, you play this, you play this like song and dance, you know, with the client, but I'm very transparent. I don't think it needs to be as gameplay. I think that the artist loses out when we treat it like that, when we're willing to kind of lose a deal that could maybe pay their rent. So it's a very unique conversation that I have with each artist to understand, you know, what they're comfortable with.
I love this perspective that you're championing the artist from the mindset of an artist. And I think even I'd love to go transparent on numbers if you're comfortable with that, because I've had a friend who Drake and their team approached this friend and they said, we're using two of your songs as samples in our project. We're going to offer you £8,000. And he accepted it on the spot. And I almost said, but it's Drake. They can afford 20 times, 100 times more than that. Is there a place where artists settle? Because in the first instance, it feels like a lot of money, but in the grand scheme of the project, it's not a lot of money.
It depends on the artist. I mean, I've definitely had like very greener artists that are actually more difficult to settle with. So I definitely, I've dealt with both sides. I think everything that you do is a negotiation. And there is no, you know, I hate when people say it's like the Wild West, but like, honestly, things are kind of ever changing and everyone values music differently and they think things should cost a certain amount. And so it's just a conversation and what you're comfortable with. I don't think you have to settle for less if you don't want to. I think it's just, usually there's more money than people say there is, but that's not always the case, right? So, yeah, I mean, if I were discussing something with Drake, I might inquire kind of what they've paid for other similar uses, right? Like maybe like what did, you know, I'd like to be, you know, more MFN with everyone else that you've like sampled from, etc. But you'd be surprised things aren't as expensive as you think for certain you know, certain verticals. So I, again, I can't speak completely to that, but yeah, I mean, you might as well ask.
100%. Would love to like dive back towards that meta tagging conversation, because I think that's fascinating. I didn't know that. So yourselves as the team, you categorize the artist so that when a brand comes, is it more so about I was speaking to a music supervisor in a different episode of this podcast, Trigger Troven. And with him, we were talking about how he tries to have the music fit in with the scene and what's happening emotionally and storytelling within the music. But with something like a trailer cut or with something like a different client where it's just background music for a scene, what kind of factors go into helping the client pick which song they inevitably go for?
Well, ultimately, like everyone's a mailman, right? So, you know, I don't get to make those decisions, and neither a lot of times the supervisor doesn't either. Like they have a boss. So I just am usually looking at exactly what the brief is. And because I'm creative, I kind of look at what do they really mean by this? Mm-hmm. Not everyone has the language to articulate what they're trying to find musically. So it requires to be fluent in both artist, music, as well as corporate client that might not have the language accessible to them. So when I'm thinking about, oh, how do I serve this trailer or something, you know, a little bit different? What have they used in the past? Is this a project that's already been released? Is this a sequel, etc.? What is this a custom bespoke like music spot, or is this where it's going straight to streamers and they need something that's going to work for promo? And there's just certain things that work, you know, clear edit points and peaks and valleys, a constant evolution of what's happening sonically. So that can kind of vary from genre to genre, but at the same time, that's required no matter what. So that's kind of what I look at. And then I look at the artist and the song and have I cleared it before? Is there like a ton of people on it? Do they go on vacation every other day and they're not going to be available to answer my question or to approve something? I think about that. I think about, you know, does this align with the artist? Does this align with what they want to do? And then kind of go from there. But yeah, it's just, you know, you just got to put your thinking cap on.
I'm feeling this very caring side of you where you're like deep, intrinsically connected to the art and the artist. And I'm also seeing this very sharp kind of commercial side to you where you're trying to get everything just balanced. So can we get into a brief? Like, what are the kind of typical common things you'll see in a brief? How does one interpret them in not only the feedback sessions and the office hours that you do as Venice Pro kind of subscription? Like, what are the things that you educate artists on to look for in a brief?
The things that I see in a brief, you know, might be tempo, might be like, hey, I want something between 120 BPM, any BPM. It just, you know, depends on what's happening. They might give some reference artists. So they might say, hey, we're really looking for like a song like Boy Genius, or we're looking for a song that sounds like Nine Inch Nails or lives in that world. And there might be some keywords and some lyrical moments that they need. Maybe they need a lyric that's like, get it now or new, or maybe it's end of the world. Whatever it is, it depends on the content, you know. So you'll see those items. And then you might get some sort of fee. Not always. Sometimes it's open. Sometimes they are willing to pay whatever. Sometimes they can't because a show might have a limited budget per episode. And again, Beyonce might have gotten $100,000 and now all of us get $1,500 for every other song in the episode. So things like that do happen. So, you know, maybe there's a budget and they're like, hey, we want something that will clear between 10 to 30K all in. And so, you know, you kind of just have a better understanding of what your catalog is and if you can send music within that scope.
I really love this section where Jessica is talking about the importance of credits in your sync application. And thanks to DistroKid, you can now upload the credits for every single song. You go to the releases section and per song, you can choose the mixing engineer, the producer, the songwriter, the cover art designer, and so much more to list it transparently for everyone to see. You can upload your lyrics as well, and they synchronize to the exact timestamp of the song and show that really cool animation exactly what you're listening to. All of this can be found inside your DistroKid dashboard. So if you're not yet part of the family, consider signing up using my link and get a 7% discount off your first year. And that link is distrokid.com/VIP/allabouthelping. Huge love, as always, to the DistroKid family for sponsoring the entire season 2 of the podcast and empowering smart artists.
You know, I think everyone is like, give me a brief, give me a brief. Like, everyone wants a brief because they think it's going to get them closer to success. But usually a brief, like, is happening so quickly and it's you either have it or you don't. And then sometimes you might have an opportunity to create music and pitch it. And that's great, but you know, it's not going to get you closer to success. You know, your music still has to be authentically you. And if you skip 1,000 steps to make music that fits in this space, you might not have put in your 1,000 hours where you are such an amazing songwriter that you can just completely paint by numbers. And if you have, then yes, of course, explore it. But I would say that's mostly for artists and songwriters that have already done a ton of sessions and written for other artists because they already are connected to that style of, oh, this might not be for me, or I'm trying to work within an assignment and I'm used to working with that without losing who I am as an artist when I'm writing it. And so sometimes when artists kind of write to a brief and they're not well-versed in it, it can sound like AI wrote it, and that's never good.
You got me in my bag now, I promise you. Oh my gosh. So let's just really unpack that. So there is a fine line between losing yourself when you're writing for a brief versus actually, how can I play this game smart and commercially and actually make this a serious income stream for myself and write music that can get placed in multiple different commercials? That's my living, if you will, as an artist. And then the music I released for passion is my side project. Where's that fine line in your eyes? Have you ever done that yourself as a musician where you focused heavily on the writing for commercial reasons? I really would love your take on that, please.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have 25 artist monikers I release music under. So yes, I've done it. I have like four main things that I do. But, you know, for me, I started out as a side artist and then I became a songwriter for other artists. And I feel like it was just a different way of thinking about it for me, where I just got to retain the rights. I'm also like a trained vocalist, so I can actually emulate a lot of different voices and I can I relate to all of them. You know, so I think if you have such a split personality like I do, it's really easy to find yourself in different genres. And I never treat anything like it's a side project. I treat everything like it's a full-time project because it does a disservice to the music to cheapen it like that. It does a disservice to your creativity. It does a disservice for your monetization. And it does a disservice to the fans that are connecting to the music when you don't take it as seriously. So, I think that every project is its own thing, and I'm passionate about all of them for different reasons, and they all have their own fan bases, and I respect those fan bases because I didn't cheapen the way that I created the music. So I think if you want to have a side project, great. If you think that Sync is going to make, you know, get rich quick because you aren't making enough money off of the music you're creating naturally, I think that is not the wisest of decisions. And it's a long game. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And when you make thirsty decisions, you get thirsty results.
That's key. Okay. So then as much as a lucrative opportunity as it can seem, like, you know, I'm going to just make music for Sync and I'm not going to make any music for passion. Do you feel sometimes that it backfires? And artists who actually they get known for not really connecting with the audience, not really making music from the heart. They're just writing for an assignment in many ways.
Well, even if you're writing for an assignment, you should find something authentic in it to write about, or else you're not doing a really great job at writing music.
Nice.
I mean, I think...
No, seriously, because I think there's just... You're challenging my perspective on how I'm seeing this world of Sync, because I guess... Educate me if I'm wrong, but I feel like if a brief landed on my table from someone like Apple TV, and I know how competitive it's going to be with so many other artists competing for that, I would want to really write the best song to the letter of the brief to have the highest chance of getting pitched. But do you think the artists who do that lose the feeling and they lose the dazzle that the artists that Apple are looking for?
I think you can do both. And I think if you're a great songwriter, you can do both. And if you can't, then maybe don't do it. So I think that when you look at a brief, you're saying, okay, here are the things that need to be done so that it's fitting someone else's narrative. But then you have to find something that's going to make it stand out and be a little bit unique, or a little bit unique to you as a songwriter or an artist, whether that's vocally, lyrically, or melodically, or you know, production wise. And then you have to find something inside of you that connects. Like I did a song recently for, it was like, you know, kind of more commercially one of my projects. And, you know, it's called like Welcome to the Party. But when I write it, I'm having fun. I'm working with a friend. I'm trying to find ways to connect to that idea and the silliness and the joy that comes with that. If I kind of went into it and looked at like, one of these guys, there's joy in doing it this way. It's just a different way to write music. It doesn't mean it has to be take away all the things that make you special.
I think this is so key, and I'm really refreshed by your mindset in this, in that you're constantly coming back to the root of the music. And I think there are many other industries in the world, if you want to get rich, do one of those. And if you want to live for passion and purpose, become an artist. And I love that that's still the case with Sync for you.
I love Sync. I think it's one of the coolest parts of the industry. One, there's so many women behind the scenes in music supervision and music licensing on the rights holder side. And that's just really lovely and safe and cool. It allows you to be creative and think differently. And to me, as an executive and as a creator, that's so fun to me. It's solving problems. It's looking at amazing art and trying to find a song that's going to support that narrative and get money in the pocket of an artist. Maybe they got really lucky and they got a scene ender on a TV show and now their song's gone viral and they've connected to a whole new audience. I mean, the possibilities are endless. I think the biggest issue is that it's a little oversaturated now, and also everyone thinks that it's going to save them. And I don't think that you should look at anything really in any industry as the thing that's going to save you, because then you're not strategically planning your career. You're looking for a savior, and that's just not realistic, you know? And once you kind of get into it in Sync, and you might do a lot of things, then you can have some sort of history and kind of know, okay, per year, I make this kind of money off of Sync based off of my output and my connections, et cetera. But when you're starting out, like, you know, you'll have somebody write one song to brief and they think they're going to make $500,000 in a year. And that could very well happen, but it's just like any gamble. You could be a professional poker player, but at the same time, you could still go home empty-handed.
I think this is so important, because the way I'm perceiving what you're saying is, like, consistently build up the number of syncs that you're placed on until it becomes predictable, repeatable income that allows you to live your life the way you want to live, instead of just thinking, I'll get one song synced, it'll be my big break. Fans will discover me from that episode or from that trailer, and then that will change my life. Do you think many artists have that misconception of Sync, that it will change their life?
And it could, but you can't plan and strategize around something that hasn't happened to you yet.
Uh-huh. I've been reading this book right now, like The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho, and there's this key line in there that just says, it was you all along. Like, you had it within you the whole time. And I'm really vibing with that from you right now, because the essence of what I'm concerning, like the energy that I'm hearing you say, is that if you make the music from the heart, from the very beginning, you might well have a song that streams really, really well, and then that inevitably gets synced. Or you might end up writing to a brief that no other artist approached the brief in that way, because you brought some magic feeling to it, and that brings what the client or the music supervisor was looking for, and then that did become your big break because that song connected with the people. Am I kind of reading that energy right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a way to marry strategy while being creative and connection. You know, I think that it's not, if it was easy, everyone would do it really well and make a lot of money, right? So I think it's not that easy. It comes with time and practice and working on your craft. And, you know, you still, people, a good McDonald's commercial is going to make you want to get fries, and sometimes it'll make you cry, right? Like, so, you know, anything that we watch is connecting to something within us. So if our songs are lacking that, are we doing our job?
All About Health and Family, I've got a little announcement for you. I've written a brand new book, and I want you to have a copy for free. It's called The 6-Week Song Release Strategy, and I've designed it so that any artist can get to 10,000 plays on their next song. Even if you have no fans, even if you've never released a song before, even if your monthly streams are at rock bottom, I'm showing you the exact social media process to supercharge your song and go from 0 to 10K. You can grab your copy from my website, allabouthelping.co.uk, And there is a free course attached to it with about 1 hour of video lessons from me explaining every step of the process. So I hope you go and grab your copy and let me know if you're reading. I would love to hear your thoughts.
So when you are talking with these artists in these office hours and in the strategy sessions, like, is it more textbook sync education, or is it more this mindset and this like kind of personal motivation of how to approach getting it right? Because I'm sensing a lot of different like personas from you as well. Like, you can be in your creative bag, you can be in your commercial bag. Like, what is the vibe of those office hour sessions that you host?
Yeah, you know, I think they change from, you know, month to month based off of what our partners are looking for and wanting answers to. It's their time, and I'm here to give as many answers as possible that I feel like might be helpful to their journey and help them become, you know, the creators that they want to be. So I do give a lot of factual information and like, hey, these are things you can do in your song that without changing who you are, that'll work, like the clear edit points, maybe a non-lyrical vocal. These are things that you need for your files. You need a mastered wave file. You need a mastered instrumental. You need lyrics. You need to know who wrote the song and who has the rights, all these things. So we go over kind of the nuts and bolts of it, you know? But we also go into the nuanced stuff that we kind of discussed. And, you know, if I hear a song that feels too cookie cutter, I will tell them. I don't think you can really move forward if you can't take, you know, constructive feedback. And it's just feedback. And I always say it's really hard to share your music in this capacity. It's very nerve-wracking. And so I try to honor everyone who does that. And at the same time, give them real feedback that I believe in. It's just my opinion. They don't have to take it. But, you know, so often I see peers when they're giving feedback to artists kind of just sugarcoating it a little bit and just being a little too nice or just not really telling them what they can do to change their song or what they think would be helpful based off of their own expertise. And I'd rather not be liked and tell somebody the truth if I feel like it's going to help them.
Agreed. Yeah, because, you know, appealing to their ego and making them feel better doesn't make their music any better, which doesn't help them get synced.
Yeah.
And if your ultimate goal is to help them secure the bag, you may have to hurt a couple of people's feelings and say, it's not personal. It's purely sonic feedback. Yeah, I hear you.
Yes. And there's a way to deliver the message without being, you know, I never think there's an excuse to be cruel, but, you know, I think maybe some people get confused with honesty and cruelty. But, you know, that's what therapists are for.
That's what therapists are for. And then the office hours, are you hosting multiple briefs in one? Are you being more broad brush strokes? Or are you honing and saying, we're discussing this one from BET today. Here's the things you can look for and cherry pick some key lines. Or how do those sessions go?
Yeah, so for our regular office hours, we're usually going over every month it kind of changes. So sometimes we'll talk writing to briefs. Sometimes we'll talk about how to get your music prepared to submit. Sometimes we'll have a music supervisor on and they're giving feedback. Honestly, it changes based off of what I'm hearing from the community. But we upload briefs through the portal and people can submit their music. And sometimes we have feedback sessions separate than office hours. And that's where we'll kind of get in the nitty gritty of those songs and you know, give feedback accordingly.
Do artists ever catch feelings when they approach a feedback session and someone they know is also replying to the same brief? Does it cause them any anxiety or reassurance that they're not in this alone?
I haven't gotten any feedback about that, if there's any like competition or uneasiness, but that's just life, baby.
Yeah, for real.
You know, I feel like I have to submit music all the time, you know, to a brief, let's say that my friend who's also running Sync Somewhere and we're submitting, she's submitting her artist, I'm submitting my artist. It's just, you know, it's just part of it. And you know, I think better to learn it now, I guess.
Yeah. And you kind of mentioned it earlier, this fuzzy feeling that you might get if you get an artist synced and they go viral off of it and it has massive success for them. You count that as a personal win, but how does it genuinely make you feel in that moment when you get that result for someone else?
I loved it. I mean, honestly, I feel proud and I'm excited. And, you know, what people don't see is how many pitches you'll send that don't get anything, right? So, or maybe you're pitching the same artist for like 6 months and you're like, why? And then like a year goes by and then you get them this huge opportunity. I mean, you're just grinding it out. So it's just like any win in music is like so huge, right? Because it's so oversaturated and it's so hard. So when you get any win, it's worth celebrating, even if it's small. Honestly, I celebrate every win because, you know, you gotta motivate yourself. So every time I get a win, I'm like, yay, I did it. I do know what I'm doing. You know, I think that there's that kind of like, I don't know, cheerleading that goes into it.
I think it just shows that there's goodness in the world. It shows that it is possible to make a comfortable living off music, because everyone has this perception of it's a lottery, or it's you're clawing at every penny. And I think there is lucrative money to be made in the right places if you position yourself well strategically, and you can also figure out a game plan over time, learning from your mistakes to get better, and then unlock this long-term kind of revenue opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'm so thankful for you. Where can people connect with you personally, with the Venice team? How can they connect with you guys on websites, socials, anything you want to share, please?
Sure. So you can connect with Venice if you just go to venicemusic.co. We also have an app called Mighty that we use. So you can actually join our community, and I post sync tips on there all the time. So definitely like join our app or slide into our DMs on Instagram. And then if you want to follow me, my account is just headbitchmusic without the I, because I can't run any ads with the I, because apparently bitch is a bad word. I like to own it though. So you can follow me at headbitchmusic. But I'm easily Googleable. So if you can't find me, just Google my name and come stalk me online.
No, I really appreciate you. I've loved this. You've dropped so much game here. Again, the mindset stuff is so undervalued by people when they traditionally think about sync. And I'm just so grateful that you've brought this to life from the perspective of someone in a position of power, but also a position of gratitude that you help others. And it's wonderful to work with you.
Oh, thank you so much. This has been so lovely.